Rope help wouldn't help.
Well, not
help.
Mr. Tan's recent evidence refers to a standard which I acquired at the early hours of this morning and have not digested. But the observation or initial reading of it, it's not referring to a simulation as I initially interpret the original commentary out of his evidence, which was a more pragmatic approach to how the yard might operate and function under various operating conditions. If I can step back, when I worked for Kiwi Rail, I carried out yard simulation models of Christchurch Freight Yard with the view of reducing the then 2 yards into 1 yard. And the primary objective was to test if Christchurch Yard was capable of taking the traffic from both yards. And we literally tested that by operating the yard and on a bit of paper on a computer simulation. And after 24 hours, it literally failed. It choked up. So the next phase of the simulation was we greenfielded that site to see if we could lay any configuration we liked into the same formal area to see if we could make it work. And that maybe got 2 days in and failed. So that left us going to an alternative, a new site. So that was the simulation I was expecting he's talking about. I'm not sure that the standard he refers to is more about the framework of how Kiwi Rail might operate and integrate all their activities. And it's very much wider and broader than what's necessitated for the establishment of an NOR and or the requirement to be a condition. So it's more about Kiwi Rail's operation.
Presumably, you know how to run your railway the best way you think.
Well, certainly Kiwi Rail do.
Yeah. So why should we be imposing some obligation on you to demonstrate its position?
I don't think that is this forum's requirement or expectation.
Obviously have an interest in what stage one involves and how that impacts in terms of implementation and getting mitigation externalities managed. But in terms of demonstrating that it works for your needs, I would have thought that's your business.
It's exactly, and I think that's where my contention comes from, that it's really outside of the scope of the NOR.
It's not managing an effect that we're interested in.
No. And I suppose condition 109 is in similar vein. The matter of safety and design has been raised and Mr. Thayer and myself discussed it, and we have discussed it at meetings with council. We are clear that no specific safety and design process and Kiwi Rail's own standards has been applied to date on this work. We're also very clear that the expectation is we would apply that process as part of the detailed design. And Kiwi Rail's own standards, which are referenced there, require that. That being said, it is still an internal Kiwi Rail process, and I again don't understand why it's a requirement to have a condition on that as part of the NOR.
Well, presumably, if it's characterised as a management, well, it's not really a management plan, but it's an output. The last thing you want is to have someone come back and say, well, you've produced this design, you're not responding to it in the way that the output shows, therefore you're not complying with the desk. That could be a concern, couldn't it?
Yes, I suppose it could be.
Okay. So your answer to 109 is the same as for 110. It's not really about the NOR.
No.
Okay.
The third one I'd like to address is condition 51A.
It's page 18 of the condition table. Council proposes condition 51A, Cap A.
The council's infrastructure expert, Mr. Van Bentham, notes a preference for connection for active transport users to be preserved between both sides of the railway line and his words were possibly an underpass. I've noted in my evidence the challenges that constructing such a facility might pose. There are potentially three tracks in the area, the NIMT and a future main, and the pullback track with electric overhead. Furthermore, there are changes at Roberts Line in track level of a lowering of approximately 1.5 metres to meet the RL50 hub level. I mean, you recall my earlier comment that it's locally high ground. These factors create practical challenge to provide access either under or over the NIMT at that location.
Mm-hmm.
There is a site further south where ground levels would allow a protected level crossing. However, details of how this could be safely implemented need to be worked through by KiwiRail to determine if this is a realistic option. The site... Rail and general ground level are similar, so having a level crossing is obviously a practical option. But we still have the fact that there's a potential of three tracks, and therefore when I say protected level crossing, it needs to be controlled in such a way that the risks to people using that crossing are managed in a almost in a not a traffic light way, or even a bit arm barrier way, which are easily stepped under or around, more like a permanent fence that opens and shuts, something along those lines. I mean, I don't know what that mechanism would be. I'm sure such things may even exist in Auckland, where there's lots of rock crossings and pedestrian stuff. So my comment overall and against the condition is that condition 51 A is broadly acceptable, however the location needs to be confirmed and fixed based on the factors that I've discussed. I think the condition does says or such other location that might be agreed, so it's, you know, I don't think the location's the bigger issue. It would be further south of the current Roberts Line intersection, so outside the 200 metre range.
Yeah. I've asked my fellow commissioners to particularly address this issue, but I prefer language about reasonably accessible or something like that rather than a particular agreement between council. So there is some definition about its functionality within the condition, but it has some flexibility in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be my sense. Thank you. Is there any other conditions you
want to? Yes. If I can comment on the conditions 57 to 59, and it's in relation to the construction management plan.
Okay.
I support the construction management plan. It has clear objectives and measures to achieve to be achieved in the CMP, and that's consistent with what the legal counsel's views and arguments were from yesterday. excuse me. I think I can. I broadly support the council's amendments, subject to some minor changes. In particular, 59G. I would think that we need to look at our original wording. And if it goes back to my comments that we can't undertake some construction work, and I mean, I suppose we could play around with the definition of construction work before we do planting. So the suggestion and the evidence is that we identify areas where we will be able to do that. I think that's a challenge.
Did you say 59G?
59G, small g, yes.
Is that operational air quality monitoring?
No, sir. So page 22 of the table.
Oh, you mean 59 small g.
Sorry.
Yes, sorry.
Little g.
Yeah, yeah. There's a big G as well.
Wonderful. It's CMP details on the timing.
Yeah.
Out and the proposed council amendment changes can to will.
So what's your point there?
I'm really saying that we're going to have to do some construction work before any planting takes place. I don't think there's an opportunity to do planting without having construction work taking place, which is what that particular thing's talking about. And I think in the original proposed conditions, it was looser. Probably looser and less specific.
I think you might be misreading it, but maybe not. So is the prior works undertaken prior to works commencing, the words prior to works commencing intended to refer to the timing of the delivery of the construction management plan or that component of it, or is it relating to the planting? That's my question. It makes a big difference whether the time component of that clause relates to the delivery of the information or the performance of the screening and planting. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I think. Yeah. Maybe that's something that we might need to do a little bit more work
around. We need
wordsmithing on.
Yeah, some wordsmithing, because that can drift into ambiguity, I agree, but if it means that you have to supply this information before work's commencing, you don't mind, because at that point you'll be able to say when you're going to, what parts you will plant,
yep,
at what time. But if it requires you to plant and identify what you will plant before work's commencing, you're saying, well, actually not much, because we have to do some,
yes,
physical works before any of that.
That's right. That's
so I understand your point, but I just wonder whether it's an ambiguity question.
Yeah. Okay. Does that work with that? I guess in an almost similar vein, 59 small I is talking about work ceasing in the vicinity of the Bunnythorpe Cemetery when there's a burial going on. And I specifically challenge this one because of the words vicinity is vague and is, what are we driving on this? I think it's there's a respectfulness and sort of behaviour that takes place. But does that mean vicinity in terms of the site or what proximity? There are cemeteries adjacent to roads and traffic doesn't stop, for example, and they're within 20 or 30 metres potentially at its nearest point. It either needs a little bit more clarity or some ability to discuss, or maybe not be very specific, but at least discuss with the people that's going on. And it might depend on what that activity is. If a man's painting a fence nearby, does that a work in the vicinity that needs to stop? Or is it a disruptive activity or noisy activity? So machinery, maybe digging up the bund right behind the cemetery, for sure would be it. But then day work's going on 200 or 300 metres away. Does that kind of influence that? Not that I expect that the Bunnythorpe Cemetery is used a significant amount of time in the context of what the project works would take to be disruptive in that sense.
There has to be reasonable responses to to those situations. These sort of little patchwork cemeteries are very characteristic of the Manawatū.
Yes.
They're all over. A rural area, and a lot of them got a bit of history in them too.
All right.
I mean, the only other one was I think that Mr. Velt will talk about dust management. There was a change in there, so he was covered in that. To close off, as far as I have in within my notes, there's some request to have some conversation around the definitions and abbreviations, which is in the front page of that volume that you're currently looking at.
So page 3, sir, of the council markup and proposed new definitions for construction, enabling works.
Generally, I don't disagree with the use of the terms in the split, but we need to carefully work through these terms, how they integrate with the various management plans, and specifically around the timing issues to ensure that they're workable. And we're obviously doing that, but we're not completed.
That's fine, and I think it is extremely important because these management plans are being used at the outer edge of their normal function to create for a reasonable purpose. But we are also conscious that there needs to be the flexibility because they will operate as conditions within a zone and therefore they are at the outer edge of the use of those. So if there are practical issues with the constraints, we need to understand them and address them. So take your time.
Thank you. Any questions on?
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's been extremely helpful, particularly to go through those plans and visually. Commissioner Sweetman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Skelton. I'd like you to humour me a little bit more with the plans.
Yes, no problems.
Do you have a pointer there? Otherwise, I've got one.
Have you? Oh. Do you want to point on that plan?
No, I'd like you to point on that
plan. Yes.
Yeah.
That particular one?
Or yes, that one or the concept plan.
Yeah. Have you got that?
What I'd really like to understand is how, well, I suppose it's going back to Mr. Than's issue, about how the freight hub would operate in terms of building a train. So where it might be taking containers out of the container storage area.
Driving issues.
It's at the top one.
Oh.
It's the same. Where's it? Which is my pointer? You hold it down. Could you come and give me a driving lesson, please, sir?
So there's the red line.
Oh. Got it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. What's the best way to start? Okay. Let us assume that we've got some wagons being filled in these freight hub buildings here. Yeah, okay.
Sounds good.
So we're heading end of the day. They're filled and they're ready to leave. So a shunt engine, so and they may be electric, but mostly diesel at the moment, comes in around these trackworks here and goes into this area here and picks up the wagon and he pulls it back out here, past this point here, and back out onto the back shunt. And then pushes it into one of these roads, whichever one they're designating for the current train they might be making up or the elements are making up. And they continue doing that.
So pulling them in and out.
Putting them in to make up their train. Now, if for example, this was going to be there's a road here, which is a unit road, for example. So a container train, or it could be already made up of a load of container wagons, say to go south to the port of Napier. Then they would bring an engine round from either the holding road there or the holding road up there, pop it on the front of the train in this road here, and he would just simply depart south, go over the weighbridge there, onto the main line, and head south to Wellington or over to the coast. So he's a unit train, and the log trains, he would depart from here if he was in a unit train and do the same thing. He'd trundle out through here and that way. The train coming into the yard, the northbound train would come down here through the crossover and into these green roads and park in one of the roads. If he's electric and in a stage one operation, there's only two roads, he'd go into one of those, he'd pull in. The engine would disconnect and he would either run round somehow, and there's roads, tracks called run rounds, but a run round is just a road with nothing occupying it. So he'd use it to get round, to pass, and go in and come in for servicing. If he's not requiring a formal service, he'd come into the fueling and sanding facility and then sit ready to go or be hooked on the train. So this train that came in would then get broken up for wherever. For example, they'd pull the wagons out and they might be going on another train. For example, they may have come from Hamilton and are going to the Hawke's Bay. So the Hawke's Bay wagons would be pulled off and poked in one of these marshing roads, ready to be made up or connected onto a train going to the Hawke's Bay or Wellington. It might be some container wagons that came in. The shunt would pull them back out, following the same principle, back out the back shunt, push them back into the container yard, right, where they'd be unloaded or stored or whatever. Wagons would come free and go into the wagon holding the storage yard. So it's just that operation. Obviously, if they can aggregate wagons out, they'd be pulling 2, 3, 4 wagons off at a time, 5 or 10 even. They might have a rake of wagons, a rake meaning a string of wagons that have been bought from Hawke's Bay that came into the yard on a train that requires some heavy maintenance. So they'd be put into the storage yards in here. So they have, wagons sort of have a, I mean, you know, like your bags at the airport terminal, really have labels and numbers on them and know what the freight is in them and ahead. So the planning and thinking about what they can go ahead to try and shift them through the yards as quick as possible. So they generally know which freights, vulnerable freight, requires, you know, if it's in a container, needs proper control and thermal control, which is another issue on the site. So that's the general operation. The interaction points, like the yog yard, of course, the log trucks will come in possibly in this road or this road. Loads will either be taken directly off the truck and placed on wagons at the standing or stored on the site till wagons are available, and that's possible. I mean, if they're en route, and the trucks would drive out and they'd just keep building up and that. So, and that's a similar operation really to what the freight forwarders are doing. The trucks are bringing or other bringing freight in. They're aggregating it into containers and then they're shifting it on and shifting it out and efficient. And they aggregate their containers either by, if they're not less LCLs, less than container loads, aggregating up to same destinations or and it might even be same destinations with an area in, say, Auckland, for example, depending on the volumes of freight they're getting. So they understand all that at those locations. But the rail operation part of it is just picking up a wagon, ensuring it goes on the right train at the earliest possible opportunity to arrive at its destinations. Now, I don't know, I mean, there's specifically arrival and departure times of trains in Palmerston North, and I suspect there are more throughout the day if I listen to what Mr. Moyle said yesterday. If I go back to my experience in Christchurch, we used to have trains arriving, leaving at 8 o'clock at night, generally 8 to midnight, and arriving between 4 and 6. So close of business departures, and I suspect for outward bound freight that's the same, at both ends with a view of delivering the freight the next day where possible and giving out. And I think that's what we heard him saying by sort of 10 o'clock, they were vanning for deliveries between 10 and 12 around. And the local freight companies were picking up stuff to bring back in. So that's kind of the operation.
Further question. What are these shown here?
Oh, text. If you look on the plan and zoom in, you recall I labelled those roads arrival and departures, one, electrified and things. It's just that wording.
Okay.
Starting from that side, if you go back to the original reference, you'll find that those are there.
Okay. Thank you. That's been helpful. Thank you, Mr. Skelton.
Kia ora, Mr. Skelton. Thank you very much for the evidence you've provided and for being here to present to us in person today. It's made a huge difference to my understanding, and I'm sure to the panel's understanding as a whole, in terms of the overall design layout and construction methodology. So thank you very much. My thunder's already been stolen. So I have no further questions for you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Skelton. I still have some thunder left. Okay, so I've got some fairly generic questions and some are quite specific. So one that's quite specific for me is around this very long culvert that's going to cross the site.
Yep.
I think it's around 680 odd metres, which is a significant length.
Yep.
And one of the questions I have is about how you would manage maintenance of that, because that's a really long culvert.
It's substantial in size, so it can be internally serviced, but maintenance, I would not necessarily expect to do a huge amount of maintenance on such a culvert. It's effectively going to be, I think Mr. Leahy may talk further about that in terms of its design and details. So I have a feeling that's more going to have a naturalised bottom, so it'd be set to allow it to silt slightly. Yeah, so maybe that's better addressed well.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, there's no access points through the hub side, obviously, and I think in the form it's a double large box culvert, so it's sort of each unit's 5x2 nominally, I think.
Okay.
sizing.
So actually large enough for man access if necessary?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Under the right protected conditions, of course.
Of course.
Confined space.
Of course. Okay. So one of the questions we've been exploring, and I think you have answered this in a large part, is about essentially, are we going to get what we're seeing on the plans? And I think your answer around that is pretty much yes.
Yeah.
Whilst allowing for some variation for, you might need to move the buildings a little bit here and there because you've got particular issues you have to avoid. My question is around how that comes through the condition set as it currently stands, and it might be one that Ms. Arthur Young or Ms. Bell might be better placed to answer, but I guess it's just a point I'd like to see that clarity of how we get that assurance that this is what's actually going to, within reason, happen.
As against a significant shift in location of a facility, which would be a modification to the concept.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were doing it, we did look at other things. I mean, as simple as literally flipping the site to see how it looked and worked, and operationally there were issues. So we did a lot of that sort of testing as we established the fine-tuned the master hub plan. We didn't change the plan, but locality and sizing and fit to work into the site.
Well, when you read the designation application, sorry to interrupt you there, it actually describes as an application for a requirement for a project. And a project is different from a work.
Yeah.
And a project in a dictionary definition is something that has been developed to a highly, quite well conceived, it's a particular thing. And I wondered whether it was a project, but now when I hear you, I can see that it is a project in the sense that it has a high level of consideration and formulation as a project. And that's why I think the application doesn't talk about a work, it talks about a project.
Yes, I think in that sense it is a project.
But I think along the way people have been unsure as there is preservation of flexibility whether in fact it's more of the old style designation, which is for a work like the Ministry of Education, and it's definitely not that beast.
No, I mean, when they were talking about works, they would have a site for a school, but you saw nothing about where the building sat or anything like that. It's certainly more developed in along those lines. And the type of facilities and where they, and the size of facilities, you physically can't move them too much on the site either. The site itself is a constraint for what you're building.
Correct.
I mean, it's not oversized that you've got this huge area that you're just putting an arbitrary somewhere.
No.
You need the longest part of the site to get your capacity to take your 1,500-metre long trains and your marshalling adjacent to the main line. But the site in itself is formed naturally by the roading network, it makes it trapezoidal. So all that stuff, that long stuff has to be on that eastern side of boundary. There's no opportunity to change it. And that starts to fix the layout even in that sense.
Mm. And I think that really landed to me with your evidence today rather than, how you don't get all the sense of that initially.
Mm.
Sorry.
Okay, no trouble at all. The last question I have is around site levels.
Yep.
Now, I think within your evidence at around para 5.5, you talk around a maximum gradient of 1 in 200 for the track connection.
Yep.
And you talked us through the bunny thought dips, and obviously there's some significant level differences through there. What sort of gradients do you have for the bunny thought dips on the existing track?
I don't have those documented per se. I know that over that length, the between the low point and the midpoint, between where I said back towards the high point, was sort of about plus 3 metres down to minus 4 metres. So it was a 7 metre change in through the dip height over, what would that be, 300-400 metres as a number. I didn't.
So the other sort of side of my question is, obviously you're trying to minimise gradients. The flatter the track, the less noise on the locomotives and the wagons, I understand that. And you mentioned earlier that the perimeter road is set at a certain level to be above flood inundation.
Yeah.
What I'm interested in understanding is the relationship of those two design elements. You know, how much freeboard do you have above flood level, and whether there's an opportunity to reduce site level by maybe sacrificing some of the gradient benefit you have on North Island Main Trunk to reduce the amount of overall fill, because you, it looks like you're importing 1.5 million cubic metres, which is a lot of fill.
I probably could expand a bit more detail back into the site level selection process to explain that. Back in the MCA process, one of the things was actually trying to find connectivity from the main line into the hub sites. And we developed an algorithm, I suppose the best way to put it, where we had a virtual yard, which was 3.5 kilometres long, which included the 1.5K pack shunts at either end, hub level set at whatever it was, flat, with plus or minus 0.5% grades for 1.5K off either end. And then we could slide that along, literally slide that along the NIMT levels to pick points. Okay. And, of course, as long as it overlapped the main line level at that point, you could fit it in. So when we came to this particular site, of course, I mean, you appreciate that we're running on, we've got the dips and a grade going up. We had very little room for movement. And I think the lowest we could go was 49.5 metres, or at least that was the level we had based on our level information from our LIDARs and things, and there's some inaccuracies in that, but, you know, within that range. And the discussion we had with Mr. Leahy, he was keen to see more height safety from a stormwater management perspective, even draining from the site to get to the ponds area. So not only do we have to consider that aspect of it, the freeboard and the flooding, but there was also allowance for site drainage from site surface water runoff effectively to the site into the ponds. So we're just keen to see more. So our discussion was, could we go up a little bit? And it was just that playing around within that range. So from my side, yes, we could come down, but that would create another 0.5 metre of problem at Roberts Line, for example. We were already dropping at 1.5 metres at that point to get into the hub level of 50 because it's high. So, and it would steepen up the grade out at the northern end, which was a little bit problematic. The model had pullbacks at both ends, but we've not. That's not included in this project for the site. All the shunting will be done from the southern end. So there is some flexibility in terms of helping with the earthworks, but it may disadvantage us from the importance of the stormwater control and lowering it, and I'm not sure of what the effective flood level was per the site. But that place reduces that freeboard, whatever that is, and Alan, Mr. Leahy, might be able to provide that information.
Is that something that you think may change through the detailed design? I'm trying to understand, you know, you've got your design level.
Yeah.
But from maybe a visual impact.
Potentially it could tweak up and down. Sorry.
You know, how much might you vary within your detailed design?
I can't see it being the 0.5 metre either way. I mean, The bigger concern I potentially have is possible inaccuracies in the level of information, so the number we're calling it. But if there's a whole global error, the points of connectivity for us at Roberts Line and at that northern end where it's getting very steep, so we've got limited information.